for the Diana Plaus Show. A Boston native, an American patriot, a political activist, a serial entrepreneur and medical professional, an American football fanatic, and a disco music enthusiast, and never afraid to have a conversation. She'll start that now. Your host, Diana Plaus.
Welcome to the Diana Plaus Show with your guest host, Hal Shurtleff. Diana is under the weather, recovering from flu, and she graciously asked me to fill in for her, and I was more than happy to do that, pinch hitting for the backup quarterback, to use a football analogy. So please don't turn off. We have a great show lined up. I've got a guest about to bring on, Barbara from Harlem, and at 3:30, one of the world's top atmospheric scientists, Professor Willie Soon, will be talking about the climate change and the realities of the issue. And then at 4 o'clock, Dr. Mark Allegro, we're going to be talking about the Constitution. And then at 4:30, we have Debbie Bacigalupi from Northern California, a rancher, and also an expert on Agenda 21. So stay tuned. And I am the director and co-founder of Camp Constitution. And if you're watching this live stream, you could see the sign in the back here announcing our camp this year from July 28th to August 3rd in the beautiful Pittsfield, Massachusetts, at the Lakeside Christian Camp and Retreat Center. And I think everyone who's called in will be at our camp, or has been at camp, except for Dr. Mark, and we'll have to change that. So and you can visit our website, campconstitution.net. Go to our YouTube channel. We've got some great videos up there from our classes at camp, activities, and year-round events. I just upload a video that was an interview of by Reverend Stevie Kraft, who happens to be a black pastor. He's in South Africa. He interviewed a white boer, a lady, who's talking about genocide in South Africa. So Barbara, how you doing?
I'm doing great. I can't complain.
Well, let me introduce the audience to Barbara from Harlem. I first met Barbara last year at a Second Amendment Flag Day rally in central Massachusetts, or western Massachusetts. But I've known about Barbara for a while. She's a regular on various radio shows. She's the author of Escaping the Racism of Low Expectations. So, Barbara, welcome to Nashua, New Hampshire.
Well, I'm so happy to be there with you in spirit and in voice.
Well, tell us a little bit about your background and a little bit about the book, and then we want to get into this horrible New York State abortion law. But let's talk a little bit about your book and how the listeners can get a copy of one.
Well, for years and years, you know, when I was born and raised right there in Harlem. I'm a New Yorker. And, black usually equals you register for the Democratic Party, you ask no questions, you have no answers. So I followed suit, I did that, and when I came back to New York from Florida, I decided to join some of the political clubs there, and of course they were the Democratic Party political clubs, and I joined several of them. And I was a faithful member, and I worked and did whatever I was supposed to do according to what they told me to do. But I kept hearing about slavery, slavery, slavery. And, you know, I have a background where my mother and my grandmother took me to church. And in the churches, I heard, love thy neighbor, love thy neighbor. I didn't hear, hate white people or hate Jewish people. So in my travels with the Democratic Club, and I was a member of one of them that Charlie Rangel, you know, he was the head honcho there. And it bothered me. It bothered me. And so way back in the 90s, when Rudy Giuliani was running for mayor, I decided, because I knew someone in Harlem who was going to work with him, I decided, because I thought he would be a better mayor than Mayor Dinkins, I decided to work on the campaign for Rudy Giuliani, and that was the first time in my life that I ever supported a Republican and a voted Republican, even though I'm a registered Democrat. So that's my story, that I came to an awakening in my life that I shouldn't be tied to any party to the point that I don't look at what they're supporting, what they're promoting. I need to first have my allegiance to God,
Amen.
Then next to my country, and also to my conscience. When I go to bed at night, I can say that I did the best I could and I tried to live a righteous life.
Well,
that's what my book is about. It's a memoir of all of these things, how they happened, how they came about, what kind of life I lived. In other words, I am the product of a broken home, but I do know my father and my mother. They lived together for a while, and then I got married. You know, it was a time in my life and in the community and throughout America where you usually had your children after you got married. So I followed that pattern, but my marriage didn't succeed, so I became a single parent. And, you know, I write about all of these things and how, you know, things can be so conflicting and you hear these mixed messages, but we have to get our priorities straightened out so that we can live life to the fullest and be able to fulfill our potential as individuals.
One of the I read your book. In fact, it was hard to put down. I think I might have read it in three or four sittings. But you talk about you've experienced racism, white people, white racism. Not, and of course there are such thing as black racists too. That's something that mostly white liberals don't want to acknowledge. But you actually had a gunfight with some Klansmen or a Klansman.
Yes, I did.
Yeah,
yes,
and you,
I did.
And you're still carrying a scar from that.
What was that?
You're still carrying a scar. Was you shot in the leg?
I was shot in both of my legs.
Oh, my goodness.
I was shot twice, but I was able to shoot him twice. And because I had a weapon, a legal weapon, and I had to run to my car to get it, it saved my brother's life because he had shot my brother, and my brother eventually lost one of his kidneys. But my brother, after he was shot, he told me, "Sis, go get your gun." He shot me. So I took off running, even though I was shot, and I got my gun. And as I prepared to shoot him, he was preparing to shoot my brother. So I shot him, and then he turned on me and shot me again.
Wow.
But the best part of it, I didn't know he was a Klansman. You know, we went there to talk to him, but that's when he started calling us names and ran and got his Glock and started shooting. But the bottom line is the Ku Klux Klan, they had a television program. I had just moved from New York to Florida so I could raise my children, you know, when I had my mother and my grandmother there. And they had a broadcast on television. They said that they're going to show people they can't come to the land and change it. And then I started getting threatening calls that they were going to kill me, that I was going to be dead in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely believe in the Second Amendment because I was well armed.
Well, I want to relate a story on that vein. Yes. I was visiting Motown, the museum in Detroit, back a few years ago, probably 7 or 8 years ago. And there was a young man. It was the original studio. It was a little modest home where it was first founded. And he told the story of the early Motown in the 60s. They would have contracts with various clubs in the South. And he said at one point the Klan, I think he said in Alabama, had actually fired at the bus. And he said, he said, but that wasn't much of a problem. We just fired back. And that ended that. So
that ended.
And I don't think he was trying to make a strong case for the right to keep and bear arms, but he did, kind of overtly here. I mean, covertly. So and of course, we point out that if you look at the history of gun control, the Sullivan Act, which was New York City, they didn't like the idea of immigrants and blacks and Hispanics owning weapons. This was back in like 1902 or 1903. So we can make the case that gun control is, and I'm not suggesting that everybody advocating gun control is a racist, but unfortunately, there is more crime in the inner city. That's a fact that you just can't deny. So
that's correct.
You would think where there's more crime, you'd have a better need to self-defense. So, and it's expensive. How do you get a permit in New York City? You got to join a gun club. And then if they say no, if the police chief says no, you got to hire a lawyer. That's $4,000 or $5,000. So most people say, hey, but I don't know if too many members of gangs actually go to the gun clubs and join the NRA and they get guns illegally.
That's
and
correct.
They're able to use them not just against people in the inner cities. So
absolutely. absolutely. You know, it's terrible what's going on in the city. And most of these inner cities are run by Democrats. And they try to ignore the fact that the quality of life living in a city is very dangerous.
Can we say exclusively by Democrats? I don't know of too many inner cities that are run by Republicans. I don't know of any.
I don't
any.
Either. I don't know any myself. Yeah.
So, yeah. So
they have a monopoly, it seems like, on the inner cities, because a lot of times the Republicans don't even bother to try to change any minds and hearts in the inner city.
Well, I think it's important to outreach. Those of you who, whether you're a Republican Party member or your organization is a liberty-based organization, reach out to the inner city. And I know,
absolutely.
I remember I was reading a newspaper called the Bay State Banner, which is a predominantly black readership paper in Boston. And they were lamenting about, they were saying that the CIA is bringing drugs into the inner city, black inner cities. Now, I'm not saying that it's true. I don't know all the facts. And they're saying that white America doesn't care. So I wrote a rebuttal. I said, some white Americans do care. I said, but when they reach out to you, you are told by your false leaders that they're racist, have nothing to do with them because their organizations, they belong allegedly racist. So we do reach out, and I do recommend that. And you know, we have I've become friends with an inner city pastor in Boston as a result of an Agenda 21 issue, which we won't go into right now. But they people, you know, and you know, they want the truth. They want to know what's right. And we also have the Sam Blumenfeld archives where we can actually introduce them to phonics, where they can actually learn how to read properly and learn some history. So it's very important that we reach out. Now, I want to switch gears a little bit and talk about this this horrible abortion infanticide law that was signed in to law in New York City. I mean, in New York State by Governor Cuomo. Yes. So tell us a little bit about that, some of those particulars about the bill or the law.
Well, I mean, to me, they're just legalizing murder of not yet born. That's what I consider it. I think it's despicable. I think it's horrible. I mean, it's barbaric, if you ask me. And I don't even see how these people, I do see. In other words, how they were celebrating, how they turned the lights in New York on to represent abortions. And I mean, it's very frightening. It's very disheartening. And if we want to see wickedness, we are seeing it in living color.
What's interesting, too, is that the history of abortion and birth control has its roots in racism. And that's something that the progressive left, so-called, I hate to use the word progressive, there's nothing progressive about
nothing
people
progressive
who want more government
them.
Over our lives. That's retrogressive.
That's right.
Going back to Margaret Sanger and Planned Parenthood, Margaret Sanger actually collaborated with Nazis. In fact, she had a Nazi by the name of Ernest Rudin. He was in charge of the euthanasia project in Nazi Germany, where people, young children and young adults with certain Down syndrome or certain illnesses or what have you, were put to death. And even in Nazi Germany, the average German, it was enough. They put a stop to it. It was interesting. And Margaret Sanger, in 1938, Margaret Sanger launched what she called the Negro Project. Are you familiar with that? Can you talk about that?
Yes. Well, you know, she classified Negroes as weeds and mud, and she thought that they
defective
were
defective seeds,
on
too, I
society.
Think. Yeah.
A scourge on society. And I think that anyone who supports this massive and horrific abortion bill is a racist, because Margaret Sanger started out to eliminate blacks because she thought that they were inferior and, like I said, a scourge on society. She also met with Adolf Hitler. I guess she wanted to get some more tactics on how to eliminate. She met with the KKK. No one ever mentions that, but she was a very evil woman. And it's bad enough that in New York City, more black babies are slaughtered before they are born than are born in New York City.
That's
already.
Amazing. That's
so
amazing.
What are they trying to do by upgrading this horror? trying to, up to me, I think it's a very racist thing that they're doing. And I, you know, to me, they're always doing, they're very strategic. And this is a horrible thing for us to not address, not to talk about, and not try to change some of the hearts and minds of these women of reproductive age. Because they don't even know the consequences of what they're doing. They don't know if later on that they're putting themselves at risk of additional medical problems or whatever.
Psychological problems.
The research is not in. But mentally and emotionally, they will be scarred forever. I don't care how they're out there singing and dancing right now. It will affect them some way, and it's not going to be anything that's good. And we don't need any more of our young people so depressed that they find their only hope is in drugs or in other illicit acts. We need them to be living up to their potential, and this bill is not going to help them do any of that.
Well, when I mentioned the Negro Project, our mutual friend Reverend Stevie Kraft and I, we were in the town of Milton, Massachusetts, which was once the home of Dr. Clarence Gamble. Gamble was the president of the Eugenics Society. They actually changed their name back in the late 60s.
Yes, they did.
I don't remember what it's called, but they're still alive. They're still alive and well, but they just changed their name. You know, things get negative. And she wrote a letter to Gamble, and he lived in on Adams Street, not too far, actually about five or six doors down from where George Bush, the H.W. Bush, was born. Margaret Sanger wrote him a letter. And said that we don't want the world to think, we don't want the word to get out that we want to exterminate the Negro. And the term Negro was a generic term. It wasn't considered a racist term in those days. It was And she actually used the term colored Negro, which Reverend Kraft got a kick out of. So he read the letter across the street from the house. Now, I don't know who's living there now. And it was interesting too that Prescott Bush was just a few doors down, and I thought, gee, they had to have known each other. They lived there at about the same time in the late 20s, and discovered that Prescott Bush, a Republican, was the first treasurer of Planned Parenthood. So that letter is available online, by the way. Just put down Margaret Sanger's letter to Clarence Gamble, and if that doesn't start the average person. The people who are hardcore abortionists, that's not going to stop anything. But let me mention too, there was a great movie called the Trial of America's Biggest Serial Killer. And it was out in the theaters, very select places. It's now available in DVD and online streaming, what have you. We're going to be, our Camp Constitution is going to be doing some showings of this video. But there's a lady. And she's a Facebook friend. She's in the extras.
Okay.
She was a nurse in an abortion mill, and she became a Christian, and she's, I can't do this anymore. She told me that that if it weren't for her faith, she could. But there's another movie coming out on the subject, and it was based on an abortion clinic in Texas. And it's the, I can't remember, maybe someone who's listening can on Facebook can come up with a name. And it's under production, but she was an abortion person, and then she realized what she was doing was murder, and she came out obviously became a Christian and come out full circle. So these are ways. Whether or not, how many states are going to pass laws? I think Iowa passed a law to make abortion more difficult. So you got a state like Iowa, but you get some of these Northeast states, and I think there's bills in Massachusetts and New Hampshire that are akin to the one in New York State. So these things, and I look at it this way. It's not about a woman's right to choose or a woman's body. It's more about population control and population stabilization. And if you look at, I think it's Chapter 5 in the Agenda 21, 40 documents, population stabilization is a big aspect of something that our governments at all levels are promoting. And that's really the bottom line here. So this idea, in communist China, they did have a one-child policy, one, and then you abort, or then now I think you can get permission to have more than one. But they'll still forcibly abort that child. And to watch the Griswold. I really recommend this movie. They say that the original jury had to be all pro-abortion. And by the end of the trial, they were all pro-life, just by the facts were introduced in this trial.
Yes.
So
yes.
I do recommend that. Well, Barbara, we got just a few minutes left. We got 4 minutes left, so we guess we get a little bit here.
Okay.
Do you have a website?
Well, yes, I do. I have to upgrade it and get it working a little better, but yes, we do.
And you also...
Barbara from Harlem, that's the website.
And you also have a Facebook page.
Yes, I do.
And people can contact you. You speak, you travel around the region on a somewhat regular basis, speaking on, and you'll be speaking to a Republican group in Pittsfield, Massachusetts, and February 12th.
Yes.
You'll be down in Plymouth, Massachusetts, in the spring? When will that happen?
Yes, I think that's March 31st.
March 31st, yep. Most of the snow will be melted, hopefully by then, or some of it.
Absolutely.
And if people who are listening to this show may want to bring you up here, and you live in New York City, so it's not too terribly far to come up here and travel. And
that's true.
And how about your book? Where can people find your book?
Well, you can find it in any of the popular outlets like Amazon, and you just type in Barbara from Harlem, because the title, Escaping the Racism of Low Expectations. In case you forget that, all you have to do is type in Barbara from Harlem and then just order it like that.
Yes. And by the way, the title basically means that low expectations, there is a status quo that, you live in Harlem, you can't get very far.
Absolutely.
You proved them that's a dirty lie. So
it is. And then what really aggravates me, especially with the liberal mindset, because they come to Harlem every election period.
Hey, Barbara, we're running out of time. We got to let you go. So
okay, my darling.
All right. God bless you. Thank you for being a guest. You've been listening to the Diana Plus Show on WSMN 1590 on the AM dial with your guest host Hal Shurtleff.
Listen to me. We've got to talk. High blood pressure is serious, and yours? Whoa. What happened to us? We used to be so much more active, but lately you've been ignoring me. I know you think I'm just going to keep ticking away forever, but you're wrong. You can do so much more to control your high blood pressure. Doing the minimum isn't doing enough. I'm under a lot of pressure and can quit whenever I want. Bet you didn't know that. But I like my job. Just treat me better. Check on me. Give me something green to nibble on every once in a while. And maybe we can do some exercise on occasion. Let's get to it. After all, we're in this together.
Listen to your heart. Don't let it quit on you. High blood pressure can lead to a stroke, heart attack, or death. Get your blood pressure to a healthy range before it's too late. For help keeping yours at a healthy range, text PRESSURE to 97779. A message from the American Heart Association, the American Stroke
Association. As school resumes and school buses fill our roads, the medics at American Medical Response want to remind both parents and children about bus safety. Never assume that drivers of other vehicles are in fact stopping for the school bus. Walk on sidewalks to the bus stop. Never run. Children must stay out of the danger zone around the bus, which is 10 feet wide or 5 giant steps on all sides of the bus. At that distance from the bus driver can see you. Check out more safety tips at amr.net/safety. AMR medics are here for you every hour of every day.
Title Boxing Club is the best and only authentic full-body boxing workout that changes your body, clears your mind, and completely engages your spirit. Our signature workout utilizes the fundamentals of a true boxer's workout, including proper heavy bag training to strengthen and tone your arms, legs, back, core, stamina, and your confidence. Empowering, exhilarating, and totally addictive. This is your new favorite workout class. Visit them online at titleboxingclub.com or call 603-206-5608. That's 206-5608. And begin today.
If there's a teenager in your life who is struggling with drugs or alcohol, you know how hard it is to know what to do. The Partnership for Drug-Free Kids has a toll-free telephone helpline for parents and families. qualified helpline staff who speak both English and Spanish will listen to your story and help guide you towards an effective solution. Call 1-855-DRUG-FREE and talk with the helpline. A message from the Partnership for Drug-Free Kids.
Join me, Bob Bardas, every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. for Books and Crooks, where I bring together local law enforcement and local librarians for a community information hour. We educate the public with one book and one cop at a time. We talk about what's trending and what's happening in Hollis, Hudson, Merrimack, and Nashua. Join me, Bob Bardas, every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. for Books and Crooks here on WSMN 1590.
Welcome back to the Diana Plus Show with your guest host, Hal Shurtleff, who is the director of Camp Constitution. And I want to again thank Diana for giving me the opportunity to fill in for her. And we have a great guest lined up here coming on in a minute or two, or actually 30 seconds. Professor Willie Soon, who is the atmospheric scientist at the Smithsonian Institute at Harvard Smithsonian. Willie is a has been an instructor at Camp Constitution the last couple of years, and he'll be coming back this year, and I hope every year, as many years as God gives him breath. He is, in what I would say, one of the world's top climate realists. Welcome, Professor Soon.
Thank you, Hal.
Well, I heard you, by the way, on the InfoWars show this morning, and thank you for the giving the plug to Camp Constitution. It's greatly appreciated.
Yes.
Well,
I can say that. Thank you for doing that, for educating the kids.
Well, that's, you know, something I was, someone encouraged me to join a Facebook page called Attleboro Blue Pride, which is the colors of the team, I guess the sports team, but the high school. And I saw a feed where it showed a state senator, Paul Feeney, I believe it is, or Paul Murphy. I think it's Feeney.
Feeney,
and,
yeah.
Yeah, and he had some high school kids that were brought to the state house by their teacher to actually lobby for legislation. And it's one thing to teach children how, or teach people how the process is made, but now, and it's been going on, it's not the first time it's ever been done, now school students in these one-sided high schools where they only teach to scare you to death about climate change, now they're lobbying for on behalf of bills, and which should be illegal. But again, we got to hold the school committee chairman. Oh, it's not an issue because obviously he supports it. Well, tell the listeners why we don't have to worry about the world coming to an end because of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere.
Well, that's I'm sorry. It's a bit of a history, but then so first of all, we encourage everybody to at least watch some of our video that we have already done over 2 years, at least for my part.
That's right.
There's also many excellent resource and good video on your site, obviously.
And that would be on our YouTube channel. We've got
several
of your classes, actually, and some of them have received quite a few. Like one of them got about 145,000 views already, so.
That's right, and that's something that we must continue to do. And the bottom line is very simple, obviously. I mean, if you were to think about what are the things that could drive weather and climate, by the way, there's always this game that they've been playing, right? Like the cold today, they say it's weather, right? When it's summer,
right.
It's slightly warmer, or there's a forest fire, they would say, oh, it's global warming, related as possibly.
That's right.
It's always this nonsense. In real science, actually, it's very hard to tell the difference between weather and climate because, first of all, remember what they tell you, right? Even the school class, they teach you that climate is just the average of all the weather. So if it's the average of all the weather, then why is it that weather and climate are not somewhat connected, right?
Mm-hmm.
But it's a long story to that. But the question that we need to address is that the fear that's driven, that because we have used fossil fuel, we have burned fossil fuel and released this carbon dioxide to the atmosphere, that we actually are harming the environment. And it's going to cause all this major disaster. I mean, by now, I'm quite sure, unless you live in a cave, I mean, you probably, every single person on this planet, 7 billion of us, including no matter how poor you are, you have heard of stuff called global warming, that they're trying to scare everybody off. But the problem is, it just ain't true. That's the only problem that I have. And I've been studying this topic for 30 years, lying awake, more or less, as you can see the intensity of, of, of my sincerity in terms of pursuing question and science, is that I'm not able to find any evidence to support them because I really couldn't care less. I often told people that I have challenged Vice President Al Gore that whether he can run a lot faster than me or not. Because I say, if it were to be true, Al Gore, I'll be the front of the line to tell people that this is dangerous.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
We don't need you to go and sell all this fake stuff out there, you know, actually just trying to enrich yourself. That sort of things. I'll make it simpler for you, okay? If it were to be true, I'll run in front of you and I'll tell everybody it's dangerous. But it is not dangerous, okay? That's the problem. And so far that we know, if you increase carbon dioxide, we haven't seen any of this impact on so-called global temperature. Never mind you're going to find this thing in let's say, Boston or New Hampshire. You're not going to be able to find it in the temperature record, believe me. Take any measurements you want. Sea level, rainfall, snowfall, temperature, what have you. The only thing you can find in terms of the effect is actually that planet is slightly greener. In fact, an accurate satellite observation over, let's say, about 30 years now, over the whole globe, we have observed that at least over 50% of all the land areas has turned greener. Okay, there, of course, there are some places where it's slightly brown. Okay, that's related to droughts and things like that. But then most of the places...
Or it could be bad management, greening. Too. Bad management of the land.
That's right. It's all related issue, but the CO2 is plant food. That's the point, right? And in terms of its murky relationship with weather and climate, it's actually a very, very weak form of what you call enforcer. They say, you know, if because they often play the game, you see? They often play the game that this is very easy to do, by the way, on a computer. You just ignore every other factors, including the sun, ignore the ocean, you ignore the cloud, you ignore all of this sort of stuff. And then you just study that, oh, what if I increase the carbon dioxide concentration and then you have a formula to connect the increase in carbon dioxide to the temperature? Of course you're going to get something warm, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if the student watched one of the presentations by Lord Christopher Monckton from England, I mean, he clearly shows you that one of the hardest questions to answer, which is to ask the question that if I increase carbon dioxide by this amount, how much should it warm? We convincingly show everybody in the world that the warming that they claim is highly exaggerated by a factor of 3, 2, 3, 4, which means 200, 300, or 400%. I mean, how many people who get away by performing works that actually have such a huge error and still continue to keep their job? I mean, today when I went on the InfoWar talk, I basically wanted to tell everybody that let them say all the words they want. I mean, they're talking all that nonsense about polar vortex, this and that, and the global warming can cause cold in many places. That's what they say.
So global warming can cause cold, extreme cold.
That's right. Yeah. That's the whole idea, and cause more snowfall. Because before they say there's no more snowfall, I mean, in 2000, in many places, many of these famous journalists were caught pens down saying that, oh, you know, the children will not know what snowfall is anymore by this time, obviously, including guys like Al Gore. But then, obviously, today is the day that we invite them to stay out there, right? Try not to wear any coat because it's so hot, right? And sorry, I'm laughing because these guys are really nuts. They are making, and what my punchline is that during the conversation is basically to say that our nation people in charge of weather and climate, like NOAA, National Oceanic Atmospheric Administration, has already offered a forecast in October of this year. And what they claim is that, well, you know, the coming next 2-3 months until February, we're going to be sure that there will be no places above average cold. And there will not be cold places, cold temperature you'll find. Most of it will be above average, which means they'll be warmer than normal.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they're just drastically wrong, isn't it?
And
then you have all this NOAA forgetting that they actually have issued such a forecast, coming around now trying to warn the president of the United States, for simply making an observation that it's kind of cold. Where the hell is the global warming, right?
Right. I mean,
these
tweet.
People, I don't know what these people are doing, actually. They are the one that is actually the swamp that need to be fired in some sense, if I can fire them. But we have a law that is a bit too lenient against all these kind of people who did nothing, actually. Just sitting around, continue to play politics, and they are doing their work. Such a shame, actually, in that sense. In some sense, I felt bad. I mean, this is really bad for these kind of people. But the whole story is that after all these years of studying, I mean, I really couldn't find anything convincing about carbon dioxide. Instead, of course, we find plenty of evidence, including this current situation of a phenomenon of basically cold air penetrating much further south than normal. I mean, this one, as I try to explain it, perhaps related to less of the less energy of the sun, basically, coming more or less to the tropical region, because that's the main area in which we intercepted the energy of the sun, which is sunlight. Then that actually is less energy coming in, so you are actually pushing, allowing the cold air from the Arctic region to push further south than normal, actually. And then also, because it's less energetic, it would be more wavy in terms of the jet stream. This is why you get that kind of penetration of cold air much more easily than, let's say, during a solar activity maximum time, let's say about 11 years ago, or 5-6 years ago, right? Mm-hmm. So this is the kind of stuff that it's a lot more easier to actually understand what is actually happening. I don't claim that we have all the answer, obviously, but then if you look at all the record properly, I mean, it's abundantly clear that it is the sun, stupid. I mean, that's the whole problem. that these people continue to ignore the factor of the sun, and that will continue to drive up this nonsense about carbon dioxide being the only driver. Essentially, I often ask them, Mr. Gore, let's say that, you know, I'll be your servant, and you tell me that you let my hand go on your control CO2 control knob. Tell me what level of carbon dioxide you want it to be. Mm-hmm. Never mind that. Ask me, tell me, what is the level of temperature you want to be set at? These people are acting like God, actually, all this pseudo-fake God, who actually can believe in such a thing and propose such a amazing nonsense about them being able to control the temperature or the rainfall distribution, all kinds of stuff, just because they change the carbon dioxide level. I mean, that's just too far-fetched. I mean, if this were to be not such a serious, more serious issue, it's really, really something that, you know, you just cannot let go of. Especially now, they're pushing very, very hard in terms of trying to indoctrinate some of the school. I heard that in Connecticut, they actually have a bill proposing to make sure that they teach only that part of the science, which means the carbon dioxide going to cause dangerous anthropogenic global warming kind of session.
And it scares these young people because, the world's going to come to an end in 10 years or 5 years or what have you. Well, you had a beautiful, on your presentation you gave, one of your presentations, you had a picture of a football field full of people, a football stadium. And you made an analogy. You mentioned 400 parts per million. Can you kind of, and then you said in the next so many years, you add 5 or 6 more people to the game, and that's what we have with the CO2s. Can you kind of review that a little bit?
Well, sure. Yeah. It's basically trying to explain to people what is the actual level of carbon dioxide and what has it been doing actually over time that when humans are actually using fossil fuel and then emitting that gas to the air, that is true. I mean, those are all sensible stuff that is true, actually. So we only want to speak about the truth. So by now, if you were to go to the air outside, okay, if you, of course, measure in your classroom, it will be much, much higher than what you can measure on the free air outside, right? Mm-hmm. Or even the air that you breathe out, the puff that you're making actually is almost 100 times more than the free air outside. So indeed, we are CO2 polluters in some sense, right? And of course, this nonsense from Al Gore kind of school or the United Nations Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change say that, oh, that doesn't count because whatever you breathe out going to be absorbed back. Whereas the one that is from fossil fuel, when you burn it from your car or cooking or food and all that stuff, oh, no, they're going to stay in the atmosphere. Wow, that is a bit of a magical thinking, isn't it? First of all, just the fact that how does nature know how to do that? Nature doesn't discriminate between man's stuff and whatever it is that you're doing, right? So in that sense, it's ridiculous. So the air outside now has about 400 parts per million. I just simply want to explain to people what does that mean, right? 400 parts per million, if you convert that into percentage, it just basically means 0.04%. Mm-hmm. And then over time, the change, like every single year, you see how much has the carbon dioxide has been increasing. It's actually increased at a rate of about 2 parts per million. Okay. Mm-hmm. That is actually equivalent, as I've shown in the stadium, a Rose Bowl, by the way, that can seat about 100,000 people. Okay, that is actually, it says the two parts per million per year. It's just basically over 10 years, you got 20 parts per million, right? Mm-hmm. So that's about 2 parts per 100,000, so 20 ppm. And that amount is just basically equal to adding 2 more people in 10 years of a Rose Bowl. I mean, if you say that those things are really, really very, very dangerous, I mean, it's just hard to conceive. Like, over 10 years, you only added 2 more people in Rose Bowl, and the whole, you are basically arguing that the hot dog sale in the baseball stadium, Rose Bowl Stadium, going to increase or something, going to change much. You know,
they'll collapse, so the stadium will collapse. Because
of the weight of these 2 additional guys.
Right.
And it's over 10 years, that's another thing. By the way, another number is good to remember always is about sea level change. I mean, the thing that they're trying to scare you is amazing, actually. The number is roughly, size, by the way, is about number. This is why you roughly want to think about that. I mean, the change of the global sea level is all on the order of 1 to 2 millimeter per year. If you talk about it over 100 years, that's equivalent to only 4 to 8 inches per 100 years.
Well, that's the latest
scare.
Why
I tell the jokes, right? Yeah. From a comedian who say, if you don't know how to move back by 4 inches or 8 inches in 100 years, you really deserve to die. I mean, those are very tiny changes, really, even when we try to measure them, right? I mean, so number, the context is very important. This is why when you look at the graph, as part of the educational process, is actually to be able to understand the number. They always try to make the graph look very scary, a lot of red color. This is why I always call them to be what you call the crayon expert. Even my little daughter, Emily, will be able to make those colors very nicely, actually. This is why I often tell people, beware. You have to be more educated than all that nonsense that's been sold to you by MSNBC and all those other CNN, all those
New York Times, Boston Globe.
Exactly, yep. Boston Globe.
Well, this is the tragedy, because bad science leads to bad policy and bad law.
Indeed.
And you've got states and cities and towns initiating bans on plastic bags. Here in New Hampshire, actually today, there were hearings on a bill to propose a carbon tax. That means you're not going to burn, you get for every ton of carbon, it's a 50. Then, of course, it will go up every year. And then they want to spend billions of dollars to defend cities on the coast against sea levels. And they get people convinced. In fact, there's a Banker and Tradesman publication, Greater Boston, New England, and they made the case. It was a report from a First Foundation, I think it is, and this organization is set up to simply, they agree with the sea rise levels, and they're telling people how to adjust. So they're making tons of money off it, and they're saying that the real estate prices in the last 10 years in coastal towns lost 400 and so many millions of dollars, whatever it was, some figure they came up with.
All right.
And I actually have a friend who's a real estate agent in the South Shore of Boston, where there's a lot of ocean. And I said, what's going on? I said, are people worried about buying homes on the beach because the ocean's going to gobble them up? He said, no. He said, the market has drifted off a little bit. It's got nothing to do with the fear of sea level. So, but you get these people who are, you know, these business people who are basing their economics on bad science. I mean, it's probably a good time to buy a house on the seafront because the cheap price is going down. If people really think the ocean's going to swallow them up in a few years.
All right, let's hope they make the wrong move.
And that same online source, Banker and Tradesman, you go down 2 or 3 articles, and it says, after they scare you about the prices going, then it says, Massachusetts real estate goes up 5% in 1 year. I said, well, which one is it? That's not so bad. I figure they've lost billions of dollars, and there's a lot of seaside property, and that would probably include maybe people within maybe a half a mile to a mile from the ocean, right? So that's not so bad. The prices are still going up overall.
Well, this is the level of corruption that we're talking about, right? A lot of these industries are a bit irresponsible, right? Because what principle? Their principle is about profit, right?
That's right.
I mean, oil company is the number one person who bought into this nonsense about global warming, isn't it? They're the one who pay huge amount of money to those people who's campaigning for this global warming. What does the oil company have to do?
Oh, that's,
all they have to do is just increase the price and you pay for it.
That's the thing, right? Too. That people, I mean, the environmental movement was funded originally. Like, you could point to the Rockefeller Foundation, and that's an oil money. And then ExxonMobil, and they accuse you and people like me of being the tools of big oil. Boy, I wish I could get a nice little, we can get a little
I
donation.
I know, we haven't received much.
They wouldn't give us
all,
a time
right?
of day, right?
No, it's a very, very sick system. Now, if you don't really care about the truth, if you just care for another jobs and survive and all that, I felt that, you know, you're just being compromised. You're being pushed around so much by the world that you eventually will not, what you call, you will not feel good about yourself. That's the bottom line for me, right? It's about courage, having the courage
that's
to say
right.
something.
That's right.
When you see something that's so wrong, how can you let a kid be sold this whole 9 yards of nonsense, you know, by those guys like Al Gore? I mean, give me a break, or Bill Nye. I mean, even my daughter and son now refuse to watch any of this Bill Nye nonsense or video. I mean, even
good
though
for
they
her.
Force them in a class, they just refuse to watch it because it's just not telling the truth. Those guys are manipulating all our minds, and then they're presenting false information while they are trying to ban people like us. I mean, come on. If they were to be so, I often say, if you are so sure about what you have, why do you have to worry about us having the same forum? This is why some of our friends are trying to say that. Why don't we try to demand them to give us some equal time in some sense? Because this is the kind of biases and censorship that they are applying now. That is highly effective in some sense by silencing us, in the sense that they will, you know, we don't have the microphone, and even though we are convinced of our stuff, of course we all can be wrong, isn't it? But the whole point is that, especially for the stuff about science, you must be willing to be wrong. You must be willing to tell people how you come up with that answer. How do you come up with that conclusion? What level of analysis? What data? What quality of data you're looking at? These are the kind of proper thing that you must do. In fact, all you can see from them is just basically, I say so. Oh, is this, how many scientists say this? How many thousands or millions of this national academies, all this big guy with so many thousands of degrees and saying this, saying that.
Well, they talk about...
On this part, I have to tell one story about science and then I'll probably finish.
Okay.
It's basically on stuff that is quite well known already, but it really was re-emphasizing what science is all about. Science is never about consensus, isn't it? About how many vote, how many people raise your hand and vote that A is A or A is B or something like that.
Right.
There's no such thing. A is A, B is B. You know, you cannot, A cannot be B, just like that, right? So, talk about a famous person by the name of Professor Albert Einstein. When he came out with a theory of space-time that is very famous, it's called general relativity, which essentially give that formula, energy is equal to, you know, equal to mass, you know, matter is equal to energy. And he gave that that stuff. And it's actually a very revolutionary thought at that time. But in some sense, Einstein was also being attacked for being a Jewish scientist, right? Mm-hmm. A person that is born of Jew origin. Those racist people in Berlin Academy actually have 100 of those so-called academicians. These are really highly intellectual people. But again, as some of my intellectual friends say, they are very vulnerable, these people. Is that they say, oh, we have these 100 people against Albert Einstein theory, but they never actually get to the actual reason why. Show us why he's wrong, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that is why Professor Albert Einstein was very calm, very confident, and just a smile and say, no, why do you need 100 people? If I were to be wrong, one person can show it, that would suffice, right?
Right.
I mean, this is why it really, really that we must continue to fight for our rightful place in terms of these debates and the ideas of hashing out who is right, who's wrong, and what data is good, what data is bad. Instead of just being sold this whole package of falsehood by them, it's actually, even if you want to be kind about them, they are selling you all half-truth. I mean, you can call it lies, you can call it half-lies, but I give them benefit of the doubt, I call it half-truth.
Mm-hmm.
But remember, if you take half-truth plus half-truth, you don't equal to truth, okay?
That's
it's
right.
actually equal to total lies.
That's
half-truth
right.
doesn't amount to anything. You would not be able to send a man to the moon and bring them back, and collect the rock and bring it back, by the way.
Mm-hmm.
So, and if any listener is listening, those guys that are still alive, that went to the moon and came back, they're basically, some of them are my friend. These are all the great geologists, for example, Dr. Harrison Schmidt. I mean, he's one of my friends. They are totally against this nonsense about, you know, global warming hysteria, essentially, right? Mm. And of course, then they started attacking him. And these are national heroes, essentially, right?
Wow.
Then when you started to have any deviant thought from them, I mean, this is really the worst kind of the censorship that you can imagine. These people are just essentially willing to go very, very far, actually, to try to silence every single one of us, you know?
Well, they're calling us...
I think how you can also tell the story. They demonetize whatever your video, isn't it?
Yes,
That's another one of those weird stuff, man. What for?
Yeah, our YouTube channel was demonetized because... And now what they do now is YouTube will put a disclaimer on anything for like Agenda 21 or climate change, anything that refutes the narrative. And that shows actually shows we're having an impact. And with all the money they spend, I think the average American isn't really too losing sleep over the idea of climate change. Willie, where can people, there's so many great resources out there that the average person has no knowledge of. But where can we get this information? You don't have to be a brilliant scientist like Willie Soon to be able to articulate the message. Where do you recommend? What websites would you besides campcustards.net?
I would only recommend your website, which is the best. I mean, it at least has already started to have a few collections of my talks and things like that, right? And then,
yes.
Again, contact Hal Shutliff for any question you have, because again, Willie Soon is just one soldier. I mean, we have the whole army of these really smart people around. All my friends are pretty much very good truth-seeking people who is all very honest. And all just wondered, indeed, everyone is just beginning to be very alarmed about this sort of thing. And by the way, we are not in this business to do anything else except to tell the truth. And we all been in this business of trying to fight this untruth for more than decades. I mean, combined among us, I'm quite sure we have multiple centuries of experience of working on hard sciences, day in, day out, thinking about all the hard problems and hard questions and how to answer them properly. Instead of just hand-waving and using all these computer model tricks and, of course, crayon painting, that's creative paintings, one of those kind of stuff that you often see in their presentation that is a bit scary, by the way. They only hope that you don't ask too many questions. This is why alcohol, most of them actually have all this special session that they have to screen even the people who come into the talk. They are just so afraid that you're asking any questions.
Al Gore,
I really love to mock them a little bit because I just don't understand that kind of people. This is why I believe that they have a lot of insecurity. These people are basically crying. Now, I mean, I was so upset when former President Obama, you know, a year ago or 6 months ago, went on this national talk show or something, saying that we all have what you call mommy's problem. I think, excuse me, you are the only one who actually apparently have the mommy's problem, I think. They are really very good. This is called the standard Alinsky rule of engagement,
yes,
right?
Yes, that's right.
They always throw all kinds of accusation that is completely untrue. There's only hope to have 0.1% of those untruths stuck on your face so that you will be already permanently damaged and destroyed by them. But I'm what you call a naturalized citizen of America. I'm a real patriot, I'm telling you. If you want to have a war and you need a soldier, I'll be the first guy
on the
line too.
I'm
honestly telling you. But the whole point is that these people are really, really wrong in that sense. I mean, in terms of this fight, I think we'll fight to the end. I just told them, please don't be scared, of course. But I'm just a very fun-loving guy, but all I know is that these people are just no good. I mean, they're really not good people.
All right, Willie, we got to let you go. Thank you again for coming on such short notice. And let me recommend for the listeners and for those who are viewing, there's this book called On the Supposed Change of Temperature in Winter. It was written by a man named Noah Webster in 1810, and we have it available on our on Amazon, and also you can contact me through the Facebook page, and they're $10, including postage. So with that, we're going to go to a break. You're listening to the Diana Plus Show on WSMN 1590 AM, and this is Hal Shurtleff, the guest host. And we'll be right back after this news.
Listening to 1590 WSMN Nashua.
USA Radio News with Tim Berg.
President Trump is still saying that there's a possibility that he could declare a national emergency on the U.S.-Mexico border. At the White House today, President Trump said he would wait to see, though, what Congress can do first.
On February 15th, the committee will come back, and if they don't have a wall, I don't even want to waste my time reading what they have.
And as far as Speaker of the House Nancy Pelosi saying there will be no border funding,
she's just playing games. So if there's no wall, it doesn't work.
The extreme weather across the Midwest is now responsible for at least 10 deaths. Forecasters say temperatures will begin to warm up gradually over the next 24 to 36 hours, but for these folks, that's not soon enough.
The wind chill's probably the worst of it.
And it's like hard to take a breath in. It's affecting my lungs a little bit.
That audio courtesy of ABC 7 Television in Chicago. This is USA Radio News.
Cars that sound like this. Trust Pennzoil Synthetics to protect their engines in extreme conditions. Top racing teams know that Pennzoil Synthetics give them the performance to help them succeed. And your car's engine deserves the same. Because your daily commute is no less important. Get complete protection for top engine performance just like the pros. Visit Pennzoil.com/rebate to save on Pennzoil Synthetics. Terms apply.
If your New Year's resolution is to be healthier, it all starts with a good night's rest. MyPillow's best offer ever has been extended. When you go to MyPillow.com, click on the end of the year special, you'll get the lowest price ever MyPillow has offered for their four-pack, free shipping, and their 60-day money-back guarantee has been extended through March 1st. Go to MyPillow.com, click on the end of the year special, use my promo code USA to get two premium MyPillows and two go-anywhere pillows. MyPillow.com, promo code USA.
After weeks of declines, first-time jobless claim bounced up again last week. USA Radio Network's Chris Barnes reports.
After claims dropped 2 weeks ago to their lowest level since October of 1969, last week they bounced back up to a level not seen since September of 2017. The Labor Department says the 253,000 workers filed first-time claims last week. Analysts were expecting the number to come in at about 215,000. The surge in claims may have been because of workers impacted by the five-week partial government shutdown. For USA Radio News, I'm Chris Barnes.
The Senate Ethics Committee has decided it will not punish Senator Cory Booker for releasing confidential emails during the confirmation hearings for Supreme Court Justice Brett Kavanaugh. While other senators said what Booker did was against the rules, the three Republican and three Democrats who make up the Ethics Committee elected not to do anything. This is USA Radio News.
Now you can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go. And pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
800-215-5141. 800-215-5141. That's 800-215-5141.
Peaceful demonstrations continue in Venezuela against the country's president, Nicolas Maduro. The folks protesting say they've had enough of the food shortages, hospitals without drugs, gross corruption, and dirty politics. Sean McFade is professor of strategy at the National Defense University and Georgetown University's School of Foreign Service. He also has a new book out titled The New Rules of War. I had a chance to chat with McFade about what's going on in Venezuela.
What is interesting to me, and this is very new rules of war, is that Russia, like a week ago, sent in mercenaries secretly into Venezuela to back Maduro. And these aren't just regular mercenaries. Like, we think of mercenaries as villains from Hollywood. This is a group called the Wagner Group. A year ago, the Wagner Group almost killed a bunch of Americans in Syria. 500 Wagner Group mercenaries, which is a Russian outfit, attacked not just any soldiers, but U.S. Delta Force, Rangers, Special Forces, Green Berets, and Marines, and a lot of Kurdish fighters at an outpost in eastern Syria. And those troops are very highest elite troops called in air support B-52s, F-15s, Apaches, AC-130 gunships, drones, our very best aviation, and it still took them 4 hours to beat back 500 mercenaries.
Harvey Wanham, McChrysanthal, I see much milder weather coming for New England early next week. Here's my forecast for southern New Hampshire. Overnight, we're talking clear, windy, bitter cold weather. It'll be zero or below. Bundle up. Tomorrow is Friday, TGIF, with lots of sun, a few clouds around. Temperatures will be close to 20. Saturday, variable clouds, they're freezing. And Sunday, partly cloudy. Temperatures 35 to 40, even warmer. Monday and Tuesday of next week, we could jump over 50. I'm Mark Rosenthal reporting for WSMN 1590 and WLMW 90.7 in Manchester.
It's 16 degrees.
It's 4:06.
It's time for the Diana Plaus Show. A Boston native, an American patriot, a political activist, a serial entrepreneur and medical professional, an American football fanatic and a disco music enthusiast, and never afraid to have a conversation. She'll start that now. Your host, Diana Plaus.
Welcome back to the Diana Plaus Show with your guest host, Hal Shurtleff. And we had so far a couple of great guests, and I'm hoping you can. We're going to be uploading the show on the Camp Constitution YouTube channel, so you can, if you miss some of the things. In fact, a question that Diana Plaus asked about Willie Soon, the kind of the backlash or how he's treated. Well, even where he works, he's treated like a pariah because some people just don't want the truth. There's a video out there of Al Sharpton. I hate to use the word reverend to describe him, but he's got that title. Just bashing Willie Soon. Basically, he's a tool of ExxonMobil. When in fact, the big oil has been supporting the environmental movement for many. People are shocked to hear that. I think ExxonMobil gave his entity, in the course of about 15 years, maybe $1.5 million. So do a little bit of math, right? $1.5 million in 15 years, and that doesn't go to him directly. You know, that's overhead taken out. That's, you know, not a bad salary, but not exactly going to put a, not Al Gore, who's a billionaire. But they never tell you where the money from the pro-climate change people are coming from. Well, they're coming from the big foundations, the Ford, the Rockefeller, the Mellon Foundation. And it's also coming from government agencies that are giving these people millions and billions of dollars, these grants. So anyway, our next guest is Dr. Mark Allegro from Cape Cod. I know he has his own show on WSMN. And Mark is a constitutionalist. Mark, how you doing?
I'm doing fine, Hal. Glad to be on the show.
Yes, I'm glad you called in. And you wanted to talk about, there's so much to talk about in 30 minutes on the Constitution, but you want to talk about the constitutionalist, the top constitutionalist in Congress, Nancy Pelosi, right? And her bill, H.R. 1?
Yes, right.
So tell us.
So it's the Democrats' first bill that they would like to push through, having now taken over the House of Representatives. And so that just tells you where their priorities are. Now, the Democrats call it an anti-corruption bill. Look out. Look out. Because whatever they call it, you know it's exactly the opposite. In truth, H.R. 1 is a pro-voter fraud and election rigging bill. So it's miraculous. And I can tell you what some of the provisions are. But let me start off first saying that the framers, what the Constitution seeks to do is to decentralize the power over elections. It gives them most of the powers to the state.
Yo, here's your mark. Let me read Article 1, Section 4, that deals with that. The times, places, and manner of holding elections for senators and representatives shall be prescribed in each state by the legislature thereof. But the Congress may at any time by law make or alter such regulations, except as to the place and choosing of senators, which actually was changed with the 17th Amendment.
Right. So the Congress can make laws that override or shape the state laws that are put in force. But there's a point where it's going way beyond. It's basically congressional overreach, and it's shifting the power. So the key word there is the manner of elections. And over the many decades, in the courts, in the Supreme Court and in the federal courts, what the word manner has been interpreted to mean is the notices that go out about elections, voter registration, supervision of voting, protection of voters, prevention of fraud, counting of votes, and a host of other things. That's the manner of an election. So let me tell you some of the things that H.R. 1 would like to do. Again, the goal here of the Democrats is to nationalize, to centralize the elections. The elections, the time, place, and manner of elections should be dictated by the state legislatures to decentralize it. They wanted to keep power over the elections out of the hands of just a few people or a single organization or institution, like the government, specifically like the federal government. So here's some of the things that H.R. 1 would do. Let me preface this by saying H.R. 1 doesn't stand an ice cube's chance in global warming of actually passing and coming into law. One of the first things it does is it expands, and I say this with quotes around the word, voter registration. It expands voter registration early, same day, absentee, so on and so forth. Now, what that means for the Democrats is it increases the opportunities for voter fraud. Now, if you think that voter fraud is a conspiracy theory, and I've been saying this for years, and some others have as well, let me just give you a couple of recent reports. These are just a couple of recent ones. There's lots more. In Texas, it was recently discovered that 95,000 illegal aliens are on the Texas voter rolls, mm-hmm. and that close to 60% of them have voted at least once. That is remarkable.
What about That's California? It must be a lot more than that.
Well, I guarantee it is. So California, over the past year or so, California has, you know, passed a law that will enable illegal aliens to get driver's licenses. And then the next step for them out there was to put on a huge push to send out as many licenses as they can to as many illegal aliens as they could. Okay? So if you have a driver's license in California, you can vote. All right? Then mm-hmm. so California has issued over a million driver's licenses to non-citizens in the past year and a half. Over a million. Goodness knows how many of them have voted.
And how many of those votes will go to the left-wing Democrats that could change an election pretty easily, especially in congressional districts or state districts?
Right. Well, it's a game of numbers, isn't it? And we know which way the numbers fall if the Democrats are for it.
That's why Here's we have one. To thank God for the wisdom of the founders that gave us the Electoral College.
Absolutely. What a lot of people don't understand is that we wouldn't even have a union. We wouldn't even have a United States had there not been that great or Connecticut compromise that put in place the bicameral Congress and the Electoral College. Here's another one for you. North Carolina, thousands of, I'm going to say in quotes again, voters over 110 years old are on the rolls. And in a few cases, there are people of over 150 years old on the rolls. Now, that's important because what this H.R. 1 proposes to do is to prohibit states from purging their voter rolls. Mm.
Well, you know, there used to be a saying in Boston, and so about a conspiracy theory, people still laugh about it, vote often and early for James Michael Curley. And in Chicago, there was a Democrat operative, and in his will, he lived on the suburbs. He said, I want to be buried in Chicago so I can be active in politics long after I die. You know?
Right. Like in New Orleans, we used to say, you know, the reason that they don't bury people below ground but bury them above ground in New Orleans and turn them above ground is because it's easier to vote. And it is. I mean, how many 150-year-olds do you know that vote? Not too many.
Not a whole lot, no.
So H.R. 1 would basically dictate to the states that they can't purge these dead people from their voter rolls. And a significant percentage of these dead people are voters. I guess in that sense, it's voter suppression.
It's amazing.
So, I mean, it goes on. H.R. 1 also would, let's see, they have the Disclose Act, again, whenever the Democrats name something, you can
just the opposite
really worry about
of what it.
Yeah,
is,
right.
Yeah.
The Disclose Act is part of H.R. 1, and what this does is it forces super PACs and other funding organizations to disclose the names of their donors. Now, some people, when they first hear that, they may say, well, why not? But if you see what's going on today, where people are being doxxed and harassed mm-hmm. and threatened for donating to different campaigns, different organizations, you understand why people have a constitutional right of speech or non-speech as they choose. And so...
And you have the right to privacy, which is a right that's not enumerated in the Constitution, but one of the many rights that belong to us that doesn't have to be enumerated in the Constitution.
That's correct. It seeks to reverse the Citizens United decision from 2010, I believe, or 2011. That Supreme Court decision came down that gave Citizens United, a nonprofit conservative organization, the right to air ads criticizing Hillary Clinton's stance.
Right.
They hate that one. I mean, the left hates that because, as it stands now, the biggest donors overall to campaigns are the unions, and the unions are solidly Democratic. Now, they've been losing a lot of that union money in the past 15, 20 years as more and more states become right-to-work
right
states
to work,
and union
yeah.
membership has dropped. So, what they would love to do is to keep potentially conservative or Republican donors, organizations and companies and corporations from donating. But that one isn't going to happen. They want to enact a constitutional amendment to get rid of the Citizens United decision.
Right.
And of course,
in fact,
you know what it takes to do that.
There's one group that's pushing it via an Article 5 convention. That's called Wolfpack. Founded by that great patriot, that great American, Cenk Uygur. I'm being facetious. Cenk Uygur is not a great American. He is a really an anti-American, and he's wants to have an Article 5 convention. And I actually have him on video. I was at that event in Harvard in 2011 where he laughed, hoping for a runaway convention, and laughed about it afterwards. So,
that's one of the provisions in H.R. 1. You know, Citizens United really sticks in their craw, but it's not going to go away. The way they hammer at it is they're always saying corporations aren't individuals. Well, in fact, and these are all the people who are so steeped in precedent, right? Over the course of our history, corporations have been afforded many of the rights of individuals. And also many of the liabilities of individuals. Mm-hmm. You can, if you sue a corporation, you could also sue its individuals.
But a corporation, when people hear corporation, the average American might think of this big faceless bureaucracy that could care less about Americans. But a corporation could be a little Baptist church. It could be a handful of people in a neighborhood. So this
right.
won't just be going after political, but it'd be going after every little. And there's some people that have their own corporate, a one-person entity. You know, you pass away, and you have intellectual property, and you have copyrighted stuff. You want that to perpetuate that, so you create this corporate person that doesn't die when you physically die.
Right. Corporations are one of the ways that we can exercise our First Amendment rights to assemble. They are people. They are individuals that have assembled into a corporation. And because you've assembled into a corporation, should you be liable for punishment, for different treatment, because you've assembled? Well, the First Amendment also guards us against that. So Citizens United is going to stand anyway, and there will be no constitutional amendment to change it.
Well, they're having a lot of trouble. In fact, the Wolfpack, they've been very active. Certain states of the country, they've only got 5 states to pass the resolution for an Article 5 in the last 7 years. So, and they've got a pretty good budget. So it's almost like a couple of $1 million per state, maybe more. And they haven't had any, they're not really gaining too much ground at this point. But when you have deep pockets and you have a media that's sympathetic, you can get a lot done, unfortunately.
Yeah, well, H.R. 1 has a lot of other faulty provisions in it. It dictates how districts will be formed in the states, and of course that is specifically up to the state legislature.
It is. In fact, you really don't need, states don't have to have congressional districts. That's something that the states decided to create. And some states, of course, you got a few states that only have one member of the House of Representatives, so there's no, the whole state's one district.
Yep, that's absolutely correct. There's no place in the Constitution that dictates the geographic apportionment of congressional seats. It only says how many the state gets.
Right.
And then, and that's based on population, and then it's up to the state legislatures. Now, some state some states do it with a commission. In some cases, it's a political commission where elected officers of the state are allowed to be on the commission. In other places, it specifically forbids elected officials from being on the commission. But most states just leave it up to the state legislature.
Yeah, I think Massachusetts, that's the case. They... And of course, the word "gerryman" comes from Governor Elbridge Gerry, who actually served as vice president, and he was at the Constitutional Convention, but he did not sign it because he was a Federalist. I believe he was a Federalist, and when they were creating districts, he wanted to make sure he put as many Federalists in. But you know, both parties do that. It's not necessarily dishonest. It might not be the most ethical thing, but you know, I know when Barney Frank, former congressman, when they redistrict him, he had a chunk of Attleboro and North Attleboro, which are you know moderately conservative. So he ended up getting Newton and Sharon and Brookline. I mean, it was like a spaghetti, you know, piece of spaghetti the way it was wrapped around, and to make sure that he wouldn't have any serious competition, that his seat was safe, you know.
Right. Well, the word gerrymandering, as you mentioned, it's a combination of words. Gerry comes from Elbridge Gerry,
right.
And mandering comes from the word salamander, because
that's right,
the
that's
districts
right.
that Elbridge Gerry helped
look
draw,
like, that's correct.
They laughed and said that they looked like salamanders. But it was the Democrats in the 1960s especially. Gerrymandering has been going on since day one, but in the 1960s and in the 1970s, when the Democrats were in charge of Congress, as they were over 60% of the time, over two-thirds of the time in the past 60 years up until this run, they raised the art of gerrymandering to a fine art. And now they're howling because, A, for the past number of years, the Republicans have had more power in Congress, and B, because of the power of computers, where you can really fine-tune this stuff.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So H.R. 1, listen, there's more to it. It's just it's a sham. It tells you a lot about the Democrats, because they know it's not going to be passed. It'll never even come out of committee in the Senate. But this is a partisan political statement of theirs. And, you know, it says a lot about Nancy Pelosi and what the Democrats' true aims are with their newly found control of the House of Representatives.
That's correct. Now, there's another concern, too, is this the number of states have adopted this the electoral voters in each state will popular vote. In other words, when they do vote, that's usually, I think it's the second week in December when the electoral voters meet at their respective state houses and cast their vote. And now they want, a number of states have passed this this idea where the delegates, the electoral voters, will only vote for the candidate that got the popular vote. And I look at this as unconstitutional. On a few points. First off, it overrides the process. And electoral voters are free to choose anyone they wish. They don't necessarily. I know there are some states that have laws where you have to be loyal to the choice of the ballot. But there's, I actually met a man from North Carolina that was a delegate in '68, and he voted against Nixon. And he said, "You can't do that." He said, "I just did." And I know that they try to do it with Trump. It's funny when the Democrats, who they really know the Constitution when they want to use it to their advantage, they were encouraging delegates to electoral voters not to vote for Trump. And I think it actually backfired, because I think a few people voted against Hillary. I think a few of the...
At the end of the day, the gap between them was a couple of votes larger. And I think it was because a few people decided not to cast their votes for Hillary. And
right.
I don't know that maybe one or two of them did for Trump, but Hillary's total dropped.
That's
because
right.
Because a couple of people refused to vote for her. So, as far as this new drive, if it were challenged in court, I'm guessing it would lose. And I'm going to take a guess as to why it hasn't been challenged in court yet, and that's because it's self-defeating. Because at the present, the only states that have voted this in their own states, are the leftist states, the blue states. And what that means is that, you know, they're gonna vote for the Democrat anyway.
That's correct.
But if the Republican should happen to win the national vote, the popular vote, then a state like California or Massachusetts or Rhode Island is going to be forced to give their electoral votes to the Republican.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be ironic indeed. And I think that's why it hasn't been challenged, but I'm just taking a guess there.
Well, one of the things I like to see, I wouldn't mind seeing some of the electoral votes in each state go to districts because, and we live in Massachusetts, New Hampshire, you have a little bit of a shot of getting a conservative or a Republican, but in Massachusetts, forget it. It's not going to happen. In Maine, you know, they had there's four delegates, four electoral voters, and they actually had one electoral vote go to Trump because of the second district in northern Maine. So I wouldn't mind seeing something like that. So I think that would benefit those who promote the conservatives, this conservative perspective.
Yeah, I actually think we should leave it as it was written, leave it as it's been. You know, eventually Massachusetts will come around. Massachusetts is behind the curve. They're way out in left field in wackiness. But states like California and Massachusetts and Washington, Oregon, eventually they're going to follow the curve. Mm. The rest of the country has been turning around now for well over a decade, slowly. As it's prone to do. But we're going to be okay, and those states are just going to have to follow suit because look at California. California is, and the leftist states like Illinois, they're going to lose electoral votes in this next cycle.
People are moving out.
People are moving out. California is probably not going to lose an electoral vote after the census, but it'll be the first time in California's history that they won't increase by at least one.
I know Massachusetts, I think since 1980, I think did we lose about three or four seats?
Well, I don't know those, but I do know that at the turn of the last century, Massachusetts, in the early 20th century, Massachusetts had 16 electoral votes. It was one of the bigger states for electoral votes. And over the course of a century, it's lost five of those, and it's in danger of losing another in this coming century.
Hey, Mark, we're out of time here. We have to go to a break. So I thank you again for coming on, and you listen to Mark Allegro, whose show. When is your show on the station here?
It's on Tuesdays from 10 to 12.
All right. Thank you, and we'll touch base. And you're listening to the Diana Plus Show on WSMN 1590, and we'll be right back after this break.
They fought for our country. They defended our way of life. And now they live on the streets. The same streets they sacrificed their lives to protect. Right now, there are over 600 homeless veterans living in New Hampshire, and over 7,000 are at severe risk of becoming homeless. The Veterans First Transitional Housing Program at Harbor Homes is a wonderful program that gives homeless veterans and their families a place to call home while they transition back into civilian life. If you know of a veteran that has been forced to live on the streets or could be at risk of losing their home, or if you just want to learn more, please contact Supportive Services for Veteran Families at www.harborhomes.org or call 603-882-3616. 603-882-3616. They fought for our country. They defended our way of life. And now you can help them get back to the way of life they fought to protect. www.harborhomes.org.
It's flu season, and this nasty bug affects thousands of Americans each year. American Medical Response wants to give you some safety tips so you can avoid the flu. The best thing to do is get a flu shot now. Wash your hands thoroughly and regularly. Try not to touch your eyes, nose, and mouth. Avoid contact with other people who are sick. And if you do get the flu, drink plenty of water, rest, and avoid going out. Check out more safety tips at amr.net/safety. AMR medics are here for you every hour of every day.
Title Boxing Club is the best and only extremely authentic full-body boxing workout that changes your body, clears your mind, and completely engages your spirit. Our signature workout utilizes the fundamentals of a true boxer's workout, including proper heavy bag training to strengthen and tone your arms, legs, back, core, stamina, and your confidence. Empowering, exhilarating, and totally addictive. This is your new favorite workout class. Visit them online at TitleBoxingClub.com or call 603-206-5608. That's 206-5608. And begin today.
Here's something to think about. Do you know who's talking to your kids about alcohol? Is it the kids with fake IDs? Or friends drinking at parties? Or maybe someone offering to buy them beer from the local convenience store? Who is talking to your kids about alcohol? Shouldn't it be you? For more information on how to talk with your kids about underage drinking, visit niaaa.nih.gov. Brought to you by the Department of Health and Human Services, the National Institutes of Health, and the National Institute on Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism.
Join me, Bob Bardas, every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. for Books and Crooks, where I bring together local law enforcement and local librarians for a community information hour. We educate the public with one book and one cop at a time. We talk about what's trending and what's happening in Hollis, Hudson, Merrimack, and Nashua. Join me, Bob Bardas, every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. for Books and Crooks here on WSMN 1590.
Welcome back to the Diana Plus Show with your guest host, Hal Shurtleff of Camp Constitution. I am the co-founder and director of Camp Constitution. And if you're watching this on the Facebook feed, you will see the sign for our camp for this year's camp, which is being held from July 28th to August 3rd in Pittsfield, Massachusetts at the Lakeside Christian Camp and Retreat Center. And let me emphasize, it's a family camp, so whole families, multi-generational families, or unaccompanied minors and unaccompanied adults. And one of the unaccompanied adults that came last year and will be here this year is Debbie Bacigalupi. Debbie, how are you doing?
Hi, Hal. I am great. Thank you.
Well, thanks for calling in. And I know you're out in California, keeping busy. But Debbie, Debbie is a rancher. I think several generations of ranching in her family. She lives in Northern California, where all the fires were happening this past summer. And Debbie ran for Congress, unfortunately unsuccessful in 2012. You also are a national expert on Agenda 21, and you attend these various UN conferences, and you just got back from Poland earlier this year, correct, or this month?
Yeah, back right before Christmas in December. You know how I like to be someone who walks the talk and also sees for herself. I'm kind of like, you know, the bear that went over the mountain. But I like to see for myself what's actually going on. So if somebody says, oh, yeah, global warming and the UN is right and the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change is correct, I want to hear how for myself. I want to see the evidence. I want to hear it. I want to be able to touch it. I want to be able to bite into it. I want to be able to either deny it or accept it with evidence. And we're not talking, you know, just with your ear kind of evidence. In other words, Al Gore, you know, who flies around in his private jets and has many beautiful private homes with white carpet and white marble and all this, you know, beautiful fanfare for a home. You know, I don't want to accept a hypocrite like Al Gore's quote-unquote facts, you know, the 10-year tipping point which came and gone, and, you know, Miami is still not underwater.
And by the way, Al Gore is a billionaire, and his father made the millionaires because he was a congressman from Tennessee, and then he became sort of the water boy for a man named Armand Hammer. And Armand Hammer made his money many ways. He made his money in the oil business and exploiting people in countries like Russia, which, you know, I consider him one of the most evil men of the 20th century. So he owns, I guess he's separated from his wife, but don't they own some beautiful beachside property in California?
Well, it's not beachside, but I've been there. I haven't been inside the house. I did a video with my friend Michael Greer, who grew up in Santa Barbara. He has a very beautiful, huge carbon footprint mansion, not far from Oprah Winfrey's huge estate. But it is, you know, a mile or two up from the beaches. It is not, you know, we keep hearing that it's on the hillside or the cliffside. It's not. It's way back. But, you know, if his dream of man-made global warming and all the glaciers melt, you know, with his hot air, if that happens, he probably would have a coastal piece of property.
Well, you know, before I get into, we want to talk about Agenda 21, but I'll give you an Al Gore story. Not a war story, but an Al Gore story. How's that? Al, when he was vice president, he visited New England. There was a terrible ice storm. I think it was 97. I remember driving to Vermont in the middle of the storm. It was in the 20s, and it was freezing rain. The rain was coming down, and it would freeze. So you had, you know, several inches of ice, and then it got really cold. So it was pretty miserable. The following week, I'm in Maine, and Maine was recovering from the ice storm. Lots of lines down and electricity out. And branches everywhere, trees down. And he's up there, you know, talking about climate change and global warming. This was back in the 90s. They used the term global warming. They didn't use the term climate change. And there was a live wire, and he went over to pick it up. And, you know, someone from the electrical company, oh, Mr. Vice President, you can't touch that. It's a live wire. I mean, this guy didn't even have the sense. You don't pick up any wires. It's just something you don't do, you know. But...
Well, you know, he's pretty smart. He invented the internet, so, you know,
well,
you can't.
Well, not only did he invent the internet, but as Willie Soon and I were joking about it, because, you know, Willie and I were walking through Harvard Yard last year, and I said he taught Bobby Orr how to ice skate before he invented the internet. And I think he wasn't he the basis for that movie Love Story? I mean, the guy was quite an interesting guy, you know. So.
Oh, well, yeah. And, you know, he has left a legacy behind. He and Bill Clinton created Executive Order 12852, which we know is the President's Council on Sustainable Development.
Yes.
That was back in 1993. And it went into, so, you know, just jumping into United Nations Agenda 21, Sustainable Development, which is in the 21st century. It's simply put, it's the agenda for the 21st century. Its sponsor, Bill, H. Conrad 353, is Dear Nancy Pelosi, who just recently said, you know, she wants to create a climate crisis council, right? Mm-hmm. So you put all these pieces together. Back in 1992, she authored the bill H. Conrad 353, which was Agenda 21 Sustainable Development. You could go to C-SPAN right now and look up 1992. It was a Friday night. It was October 2nd. It was 9:11 p.m., no joke, 9:11, I'm crying 9:11 and all this stuff. And the bill was to implement, push through, urge Congress to push through Agenda 21 Sustainable Development. Agenda 21 is the agenda for the 21st century. Based on what? Based on climate change, man-made climate change. And we must, according to the Kyoto Protocol and the Paris Agreement, we must save planet Earth from rising 1.5 degrees Celsius. And how do you do that, Hal Shirtless? You live a sustainable development lifestyle in the 21st century. You walk, you bike, you take public transportation. You move out of rural America and you move into a city. You live in a high rise where you could play and you could walk to work and life is safe and the cities are resilient from climate change. Mm-hmm. And both Nancy Pelosi and Al Gore are instrumental, and isn't it instrumental in passing or trying to push through for Nancy Pelosi? It never went through, but we're seeing, you know, her H. Conrad 353, Agenda 21, local Agenda 21 everywhere. But the President's Council on Sustainable Development went into every federal branch of government back in 1993. So when people say, Hal, that Agenda 21 is a voluntary, you know, plan, bull loney. That is the biggest BS line that media throws out to a public who, that, you know, these globalists, and I love now that we've been talking about globalism for how many years now? 10 years? And now globalists and globalism is heard all over the news. So at what point are people going to say, wait a minute, maybe these people like Hal Shurtleff and Debbie Bacigalupi, who people like to call conspiracy theorists, maybe they're on to something, Hal.
Well, what's interesting is that I recently was called a conspiracy theorist by a fellow in a local newspaper near my home. And when I rebutted it, this was online, I show, well, Nancy Pelosi didn't think so. And here's a video of her from 1993. You mentioned it. It's on YouTube, too, of her pushing it. And then Bill Clinton didn't think so. By the way, it was George H.W. Bush who attended the meeting in Rio de Janeiro in 1992. It was, what, June, middle of June. He signed it. He didn't get reelected. So if he did get it reelected, he would have been the one that created the White House Office of Sustainable Development. And they created this book, which you can find online, free, a free download, Towards a Sustainable America. And I think there were 8 goals, and one of them was population stabilization, not just in the United States, but around the world. And when I pick up my Constitution, Debbie, I don't see that as one of the goals, the jobs of the president, population stabilization. Maybe I have an old version. But I know you gave a great class at camp that last year, and I think so far you get about over 40,000 views, because that's we uploaded it when the California fires were going on, and it was on the California fires, Agenda 21, Agenda 2030. But you made reference to of course, today, you don't see much of the term Agenda 21. They've rebranded it. But I'm holding up a book, you can't see it, which we actually put into PDF format. It's available on our, available on our, here we go. He's going to stick it right there. Rescue Mission Plan on Earth, A Child's Guide to Agenda 21. And Mikhail Gorbachev, that great humanitarian who put booby-trapped toys in the countryside of Afghanistan where little children blew up their faces and hands, he writes in here. I think Al Gore is in here. And it's there's a chapter. It says, could you imagine a 10-year-old child asking this question to the UN? Why wasn't there a Chapter 5? Why didn't they go into more details about population control? And they said, well, it's because of the influence of the Catholic Church and other groups. We were trying to tiptoe. I mean, can you believe that? It's such blatant propaganda. But that's when they didn't have a trouble with the term Agenda 21. Now they don't want to say it. And you pointed out very correctly. They say it's, well, it's nothing more than a bunch of guidelines. Yes, the document itself, 40 chapters written in numerous languages, that is what they call soft law. But once it got here to the United States and they turned it around and said, now this is policy. Every arm of the federal government is going to be pushing that, including the military, and then states pick it up and towns pick it up, and then they ban certain things like plastic bags and straws and plastic bottles, and they reconfigure the streets and they brainwash our kids. That's when it gets real. And now here in New Hampshire, they want to have a carbon tax. They want to levy a carbon tax on everybody in the state.
Yeah, you know, that's crazy because I love that book, by the way. I mean, love, hate, right? That Rescue Mission, Planet Earth, a children's edition to Agenda 21. You know, I think everybody should get it. I got like 40 copies, used copies on Amazon.com several years ago, and I was handing them out to people. I got them for like 30 cents a book.
So, right. Well, you make the price go up because you got a lot. And we actually have, it said that the book is, the children of the world hold the copyright. So I asked my children and they said I could reprint it. So we put
it's sickening, Hal, that the populate the human world chapter, you know, baby bomb, they call it. And it's written after Professor Paul Ehrlich, who's a Stanford professor today, a Stanford professor, Paul Ehrlich. So they quote baby bomb after his book Population Bomb, which says human beings are bad and we're destroying planet Earth and we're causing, you know, all this biodiversity degradation and blah blah blah. But you know how, here's what it says in this is a children's book, people, listeners, this is for children to read, and here's what it says. The planet groans every time it registers another birth. Mm-hmm. The planet groans every time it registers another birth. Oh, does that mean the planet groaned when I was born? And look what's happening in New York, you know, with these abortion laws. I mean, where are we heading, Hal? It's you know, I hate to be Debbie Downer, but it's hard not to be Debbie Downer.
Well, Well, of course, I contend that this I mentioned this earlier when we had Barbara from Harlem on, is that this abortion, its idea of it's a woman's right to choose, it's really population control. In a totalitarian state, it's much easier to have controls like that, like they have in communist China. But in our country, we're supposed to be a free country, and everyone makes their own choice. So now it's a woman's choice. But you see, lots of men are making a ton of money. In fact, in this Agenda 21, this rescue mission, I was just reading it before the show started, it was really denigrating men. It said, well, men don't really do much, except they might make women pregnant, but they don't carry children.
Yeah, and, yeah, let's talk about that, because I've got that right in front of me. It's a question.
What page is that?
That is page 35. There's a lot in Agenda 21.
By the way, if you're listening to this show or you're watching, please get a hold of me. I can send you a PDF version. You can buy this online in hard copy, but I can send you a really nice, clean PDF copy. Yeah, so there's a lot in Agenda 21 about women playing a crucial role in population, but aren't men usually the problem? And you want to answer that?
Yes. There's a lot of male authority, but not much male responsibility in relation to childbearing. Get this, men are not burdened with the problem of giving birth. They tend to exploit children, sending them to work instead of investing in their education. What can children do? They should challenge their parents not to have any more children until they can look after them properly. And I have to tell you how American kids were involved in the distribution, the writing, the authoring of this book. Namely, Girl Scouts of America and Boy Scouts of America were intimately, and then other schools in the United States, Earth Charter schools, involved. This is sickening.
It is sickening. Could you, I mean, I have five children, my wife and I, five children. Every time we had a new child, they just couldn't be excited enough. Another brother, well, we only have one son. Another child coming into the house. They just said, "Dad, yeah, too many kids. We don't want you to have any more kids." I can't imagine that happening. And the idea that men, yeah, some men do, but and my children work, but at the end of the day, they're not putting a lot of money in the household. Even some of them are adult children. So this is just blatant propaganda, and anyone promoting this should be deeply ashamed of themselves. But no, just the opposite. They love promoting this stuff, this culture of death, which permeates this country, unfortunately.
Yes, and if somebody's going, why are they talking about this, and what does this have to do with climate change? These very folk who would put out a children's book like this, which is absolutely disgusting. It is, the whole book is just disgusting. It's beautifully done, you know.
Nice pictures, of course, and scary pictures of some dead trees or some dead animals or what have you.
Yeah, and for those people who are against vaccinations, the United Nations, this book is, you know, is a United Nations Environment Program book for children, or it might be UNESCO. I'm not even going to take the time to look, but it is a UN book. Some of the pictures show them vaccinating planet Earth, and what their goal was is that over by the year 2000 or 2001 or something like that, that over 80% of the world's children would be vaccinated. And so we're seeing a heavy push in vaccinations for California, for example. I mean, all the things that are in this book are absolutely coming true, where you and I and so many good others were being accused of being, you know, scaremongers and the sky is falling and Chicken Little and conspiracy theorists and right-wing extremists and alt-right and racist.
That's
and,
right.
And, you know, whatever other name they want to come up with and try and diminish our voice. And here's the thing, you know, if Southern Poverty Law Center and groups like that heavily funded, we're talking hundreds of millions of dollars in their coffers to try and take down people like you and me, because what are they afraid of? The truth?
The truth. Yeah, they actually, I had someone, they did an article, I was giving a presentation in Connecticut, and someone from the Southern Poverty Law Center showed up. And you could tell they have this real nasty countenance. You know, they sit in the back of the room. They don't really interact with anybody. They won't pick any literature up that's on the table. And as soon as the program's over, they out the door. They won't take a bit. They won't identify themselves as, you know, I'm with this organization. It's a pretty easy to spot them. And
yeah, so they say, you know, they say that overpopulation causes anthropogenic man-made global warming.
Well, you know, it's interesting. You show me a town, a city, a state, or a country with a losing their population, and I'll show you poverty and unemployment and low wages. That's just a natural, scenario.
Yep. And, you know, where we're heading, their goal ultimately is that I went to several conferences recently. In 2018, I went to the United Nations Habitat 9 conference in Malaysia. And that conference was called Cities for All. The name says it all, Cities for All. And the goal of that is to force people out of their cars, live in cities, live in high-rise, because they think the built world, where it's vertical sprawl versus horizontal sprawl, is more sustainable and softer on planet Earth than people living, for example, on a cattle ranch like I do. Then the next conference, another one I went to was Eco Cities in Australia. I went with CFAC.org to that one. And that one was all about climate change policy, policy and policing. And then I went to Jerry Brown's Climate Summit in San Francisco with my friend Michael Greer and my friend Craig Rucker and my friend Jeanette Finnicum and my friend Mark Herr and my sister, and we dressed up as zombies and followed Al Gore around. Well, Al Gore. It was really Craig Rucker of CFAC.org dressed up as Al Gore. And we were zombies walking the streets of San Francisco in protest of this conference saying, save the planet, stop global warming. So that was quite fun.
I think the average person there probably thought you were for real. They couldn't discern that you were mocking them.
We had people following us. We had, you know, people just mocking us. But the funniest thing was being in front of their conference, Jerry Brown's big climate change conference, and they hid the entrance with a bush. What kind of bush? A plastic bush. A huge plastic bush. Bush, fake, you know, it looked like a bush, but it was fake. It was plastic, and it was huge. And here they mimic, you know, Trump wanting to build the wall. You know, they have this fake plastic fossil fuel wall to try and keep people out of their conference. You know, just a bunch of hypocrites. And then of course, they went to the United Nations Framework Convention on Climate Change. Convention of Parties 24 in Poland. I went with New American Magazine, our friend Alex Newman, Rucker, and what a blast. But let me tell you how I am so nervous, because the amount of children, I've been to many UN conferences and Fish and Game and all sorts of conferences, because I really want to walk the talk and I want to speak with my own mouth and see with my own ears and what I hear and what I see and what I read and study. I want to put that together for the American people so that they see how their future is being stolen from them on this hoax, this claim that you and I breathing is toxic to the environment, when all you have to do is drive your car from Sacramento to Lake Tahoe and see all the beautiful green trees along the highway. Why? Because our trees love emissions. Plants love our carbon dioxide.
Well, you know, Debbie, in New England, we've got about 90% more forest than we had 100 years ago. And that's because of technology, because people used coal and oil 100 years ago, and then gas as it got deregulated, because the coal people said to Congress, oh, we don't want... Once the seamless pipe was invented in the 1930s or whenever it was, that made gas more... you could actually transport it safely. And because of that, you didn't need to use as much wood, so the trees grew back. And because of farming techniques, you didn't know it needed as much farmland, and so the trees grew back. And people are thinking, oh my God, the tree... I remember the acid rain scare. In fact, this Rescue Mission talks about ozone and ozone holes and acid rain, which are scares that are no longer brought up because they were lies.
Yeah. Well, and there's so many scientists, too. Dr. Willie Soon, Dr. Patrick Moore, who founded Greenpeace and doesn't want anything to do with Greenpeace anymore because they've turned so extreme. In fact, when I was at the 2012, now just FYI, I don't know where we are in time, Hal, so if you need to
pull the hook. We've got about 5 minutes left.
Okay, great. So in 2012, when I went to Rio Plus 20, the United Nations, you know, it was the 20
You must have a lot of stickers on your suitcase there. You've been all over the world. My goodness.
I am a carbon emitting machine comes to these, you know, conferences just to see what the heck they have in mind for us in the future. And I remember sitting, Hal, in a presentation that showed Greenpeace video of a harbor seal, an Eskimo with a hook, and dragging around a harbor seal, a baby harbor seal, and the cow, the mom harbor seal, just like in cattle ranching, it's called the cow. The cow was following her baby, her dead baby, which was leaving blood right on the glacier or the snowscape, and we found out that by Greenpeace, which was to say, look how bad the Eskimos are to, you know, the harbor seals. That was a all-day shoot because someone showed us. So in other words, they killed that baby seal to shoot this all-day camera shoot to create a little film or a documentary to say how bad these Eskimos are to the animals and abusive, right? And this was when there was the polar bear scare. And we saw the different shadows. So you had the morning shadow and the afternoon shadow. They kill to prove a point, and their point is a bunch of lies. And they kill.
That's right.
It's atrocious. So, you know, so maddening.
It was interesting too. I've been this debate in Boston over the plastic bag ban recently. And of course, Boston is a member of Green Communities. It was a member of the UN's ICLEI, International Council for Local Environmental Initiative, but they don't really need. But I think Nashua, where we are right now, is a member. And you see they're implementing certain things here, not as advanced as it is in Boston.
You know how if I were listening, I'd say, okay, so what's the takeaway? Unless we start, you know, that you always hear think global, act local. We do need to think local, and we need to act local. Forget about thinking global. What's happening is globalization, and we see that happening. If we cannot take back our local schools, you know, all the different elections that go on in your local area, if you cannot start taking those things back, you're going to have crazy laws like the plastic bag ban that's now in Boston. And last summer, I was warning people in Boston what was to come as it was pouring down rain right before Camp Constitution and during Camp Constitution. And I couldn't buy, so I was soaking wet, and I went to buy a raincoat. And the only thing they had that I could put my soaking clothes in was a paper bag. So by the time I started, you know, walking back to my hotel, the paper bag was already just soaking wet from my clothes and the rain, and everything just fell on the ground. So here's the thing, and here's what I always say, Hal. I want to give a little thing that I say every time, because California has the plastic bag ban. We've had it for over a year, maybe 2 years. And I have to buy a plastic bag. So if I go to the grocery store and they say, do you want to buy a plastic bag or a bag? I say, I do not want any government bags today.
That's right.
What? I'm supposed to buy a plastic bag for my plastic toothbrush that I'm about to buy, for the plastic Ziplocs that I use to protect my food, for the plastic milk container, for the plastic over the food that is food safety, right? So you want me to buy plastic with my plastic credit card in your plastic credit card taking machine because you think me buying a plastic bag for all my plastic saves planet Earth. And I always get a response. Always. And if I'm in a state that doesn't sell plastic bags yet, I say, oh, you mean I don't have to buy a plastic government bag from you? And that always starts a conversation. So, you know, I urge people to really get active in your area, because here's the future. They will tell you what to eat, what you can and cannot eat, what you can and cannot wear. The fashion industry was at the Poland conference, and now they're involved in sustainable development. Walmart, all these.
That's right. Debbie, we have to, we're out of time, so thank you for being a guest. Debbie Bacigalupi, you can find her online, heartland.com. www.diana.org or our YouTube channel, Camp Constitution. You've been listening to the Diana Plus Show with your guest host, Hal Shurtleff. And a special shout out to Diana for letting me have the opportunity to be on the show. And we'll catch you down the road. God bless. And check out campconstitution.net.